Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. We have a listener of the week, Jeff Jowdy. He's constantly spreading the word about nonprofit radio, especially on Twitter. He's in Athens, Georgia and Franklin, Tennessee. His business is Lighthouse Council at lighthousecouncil.com. On Twitter, he's at Jeff Jowdy, J-O-W-D-Y. Jeff, shout out to you. Thank you so, so much for helping spread the word about nonprofit radio. Really, I'm very, very grateful for your support. Congratulations on being our listener of the week, Jeff Jowdy. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd come down with African trypanosomiasis if I heard that you had missed today's show. Female technologists. Women are underrepresented in nonprofit technology and leadership. What can your organization do to support the women who make up 60% of nonprofit employees? And how can women help their own careers and each other? Our panel interview is from the Nonprofit Technology Conference back in April. And hiring geeks. Amy Sample Ward, our social media contributor and CEO of N10, the Nonprofit Technology Network, which hosts the Nonprofit Technology Conference, shares her strategies for hiring technologists if you're not technical. Job descriptions, interviewing, testing, and onboarding are what we'll talk about. On Tony's Take Two, a taste of nonprofit radio video. We're sponsored by Generosity Series. They host multi-charity 5K runs and walks. Here's the interview from Nonprofit Technology Conference on Female Technologists. Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of NTC 2014. We're at the Marriott Wardman Park Hotel in Washington, D.C. And I am joined by three women. We are going to talk about female technologists, leading ourselves and helping each other. And those three women are Dana Goldstein. She's founder and CEO of Philantech. Rose DeFremery, founder and CEO of Lowercase D Consulting, and Tracy Kronzak, consulting manager at Cloud for Good. Ladies, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Let's start the furthest away. Tracy.
Cool.
Well, why are women so underrepresented in technology?
You know, I think it has a lot to do with a few things. You know, I'll start with a little factoid, and it really is one because women in the nonprofit sector represent almost 60% of nonprofit staff and only 21% of senior leadership. And that means that when you layer in something like technology, what happens is that you are not only coming to the table with already it's slanted against you when it comes to accessing senior leadership, but all of the things that we talk about at this conference here, such as getting IT to the table in the first place, prioritizing IT strategy at an organization, you're fighting that in addition to that slanted table. And lastly, you're also fighting the factors that actually just make women's career success something much more difficult than men's career success, because of all the things that, you know, you'll hear from like strong women leaders in the for-profit sector, like Marissa Meyer and Sheryl Sandberg say, about mentorship, role models, and the ability to access that sort of informal formality that happens around career promotion. So, you know, we're here today because this is a time that has come for women in the sector, and we're here today to talk about an issue whose time is necessary to talk about at this conference.
And it sounds like women need to be helping each other considerably more than they are.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. The time has come for both women to not only step up to the plate with our own networks, but simultaneously, you know, make sure that we're looking forward for our own careers and putting our hands back for people's careers behind us, most notably other women.
Okay. Rose, anything more you want to add introductory-wise?
To that topic, absolutely.
Yeah.
The issue of women and technology in our sector, to my knowledge, has never really been a formal topic of conversation at this conference or in other nonprofit forums that I've been a part of. And speaking as someone who has a long career in nonprofit IT before the career I have now, about 10 years as a nonprofit IT director, I personally lacked role models. That was one of the only ones around who I could look to as the person who was performing that function. Although there's plenty of networking for IT here at this conference, women in technology, that has not been a dedicated forum or a dedicated topic of conversation, and there's so much fertile ground. And I've had women over plenty of time coming to me because they saw me in this role, wanting to have this conversation. I thought, you know what? We really need to be talking about this in a more formalized, structured way.
Okay. And Rose, in your own career, going backwards as an IT professional, did you feel sort of left out, or did you in fact have the support that we're encouraging?
Well, it's interesting because some of that is mixed in with the issue that Tracy was talking about just now, where IT as a function can have difficulty getting a seat at the table, man or woman. I see my male peers running into this often as well. That being said, I think that some of this was necessary to build on my own networks and support groups and mentorship opportunities with other women. I didn't necessarily feel obviously and concretely left out often. But then later on in my career, I began to realize, wait a minute, in order to advance my career to the next level, I really need to be doing more in my own professional development.
And figuring some of that out, a good amount of it on your own.
Exactly.
Yeah. Dana, anything you can add introductory-wise?
I do think that the time has really come to have this conversation, and I think even just walking around the conference, if you look at the number of women here versus the number of men, a lot of more tech-oriented conferences, you'll see a lot more men than women, but if you come to the NTC, there are a lot of women. So there's a lot of women representation here. Not everybody is necessarily in a technology function in their organization, and some of that has to do with just the way that IT functions are developing in nonprofits, and that a lot of people, men and women, end up being more kind of accidental techies and sort of being the people in their organization who are in a marketing or a communications function who are just comfortable with technology and end up sort of taking on the role of technologist. So one of the things that we feel is important to talk about is, particularly for women, but for men as well, when you end up in that accidental techie role, as technology is becoming really more integrated into the mission work of organizations, how can that transform your job function and potentially your job title so that technology is a more essential part of the role and in more cases part of the job description and the job function that's actually being pursued.
And since you're talking about jobs, you just ended job description and function, what Dana, can organizations do? And we're going to get to the personal level also, women helping themselves and each other, but let's start at the organization level. What would you like to see done differently, better?
There are a number of things, and one is, I do think that this conversation about women and technology is really tied into the conversation about technology having a seat at the table in general. So bringing technology to the table, to senior management, but the stat that Tracy mentioned early on, that despite the fact that women represent 60% of the jobs in the nonprofit sector, only 21% of the leadership, I think it's really important for organizations to grow their women leaders and to grow women who are performing good functions within the organization into leadership roles, promote them into leadership roles, bring them to the table, bring them, us, into senior management so that we can also then provide role models for people coming behind us.
And do you have advice at the board level, how the nonprofit's board can be contributing to this?
I mean, I think the board needs to be involved in the conversation. You know, boards are involved in doing things like setting hiring plans and setting compensation plans. So, sometimes the board construction can also be a factor, depending, an all-male board is more likely to think about things in all-male terms.
Yes.
So depending on the board construction, there may be ways to diversify the boards as well. There have been a number of studies that have come out recently in the for-profit sector that outline the fact that companies that have women on boards and women in senior management roles outperform companies that don't.
And as you were making that point, Tracy was violently shaking her head yes. Do you want to tell us about one of those surveys?
Well, I mean, obviously the facts and statistics are out there, and frankly, one of my favorite terms lately at this conference has been, let me Google that for you, because I think, to Dana's point, we have studied the phenomena of women in technology for years. We know where the numbers lie for both companies that make conscious efforts to incorporate women's leadership into their board and senior management. We know how they perform. We know, an awful lot about women, but all of that study is actually, in my opinion, taking the place of real action.
Well, it's the chronic that we hear a lot of times by obstructionists. Needs to be studied more.
Exactly.
We need better studies. The research is not there.
So it's like, when people ask me for facts and statistics, I'm like, let me Google that for you right now, and I'll show you some. But on the other hand, it's like, the difference now is the time has come for action. And I think what all of us came to the realization during the course of the development of this workshop is that in the absence of seeing concrete organizational action or consistent organizational action in the nonprofit sector, we would start somewhere. And that was kind of the onus for this workshop to beginning with.
Anything more, Tracy, you'd like to add to what Dana suggested, still at the organization level?
I think at the organization level, the study that most kind of resonates with my own experience is the one that says, you know, organizations that are mostly predominantly run by men always will default to male modalities in hiring and promotions. And it's not got anything to do other than with communication styles and presentation of career assertiveness that makes those choices happen in very unconscious ways. So we can only break that by being much more conscious about elevating women to boards and to leadership positions in the nonprofit sector.
Rose, anything you want to add on the organization level?
Well, I'm going to definitely agree with my colleagues on what they've said so far. I also think that it happens at the personal level, that women ourselves as technologists are going to have to kind of stretch forward and backward at the same time. We're going to be advancing ourselves in our careers and seeking a seat at the table if it's not extended. And like Tracy said, I don't necessarily think it's always a conscious thing. I think that there are defaults in culture that can kind of facilitate this. Mm-hmm. But it's not necessarily an obstacle. All you need to do is kind of press forward and ask. One of the things that I learned in the research for tomorrow's presentation was that women, as much as this is still, you know, being debated and discussed, right, are not requesting professional advancement opportunities as much as they could in the mentorship department. So that's something that we as women can do. And there's nothing to lose. There's everything to gain. But at the same time, I think we also need to recognize our own talents and experience and consciously look at other women. Dana made a point about if you're a woman in senior leadership at a nonprofit, to consciously invite other women who are coming up in the organization to the table, to leadership discussions and conversations and forums, which would be appropriate so they can get experience and exposure.
So you're not necessarily asking for a promotion, but you're asking for inclusion into some of the, is it literally just like some of the meetings that you're excluded from, even without that, having that leadership title? I mean, is it that easy? Or I'm asking, what is it we're asking for, or we should be asking for?
Well, that's going to depend on the specific woman and her situation. So there are plenty of women who I think probably should and you know, definitely need to go out there and ask for promotions, depending on what they're doing and, you know, where they are in their career. But at the organizational level, absolutely. I think that there should be concrete efforts to develop women in terms of professional development opportunities, trainings, and education and all of that kind of stuff that's invested in the staff. And this also is an issue for IT staff and nonprofits in general, men and women. But in addition to that, women and others in leadership and organizations should, consciously think about if we have forums where decisions are being made in the organization at that higher level, how do we get the younger women who have leadership potential exposed to that in an early stage?
Excellent. Okay.
I can actually offer an example from the for-profit world as well, and that is, you know, at this last Dreamforce, which is a very large Salesforce conference this year, Mark Benioff and Sheryl Sandberg spoke a great deal about some of the stuff that they're doing at Salesforce.com with regards to including women in that kind of experience. And it's not so much that it's the case that we're saying, okay, now you as a junior person should come in and make senior level decisions. But the truth is it's a recognition that the exposure to the processes about how those decisions get made, the types of conversations that need to happen around them, are limited for women. And they're limited in a number of ways, up to and including the absence of role models at higher levels. So, you know, if you're a guy in technology, you know, another guy will take you out for a drink and say, you know, okay, young lion, here's how business takes place. Whereas, you know, if you're a young woman in technology, a guy will take you out for a drink and everybody will say, ah, Washington, D.C. So, you know, the truth
I don't get that. Washington, I don't get it.
Younger woman, older male, usually indicates a transactional relationship.
Oh, here we are in Washington, D.C. Oh, yes. Okay. Oh, I see.
And as a D.C. resident, I'd take that a little personally.
Okay. So, you know,
and
point
as a New Yorker, I didn't get it. I don't think we think. I hope we don't think like that in New York. I don't think we do. But all right. But we're in the belt. We are in the beltway now. I get it now. Thank you.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
B
Bonjour, this is Dominique Decoq.
Bonjour, c'est Tamara Zuboff.
Bonjour, c'est Asania Kone.
We are hosting Pardon My French, New York City.
Our guests come from all over the world.
From Mali to New Caledonia, from Paris to Quebec.
French is their common language, yet they all come from different cultures, backgrounds, or countries.
And their common desire is to make New York their home.
Listen to them share their stories.
Join us at Pardon My French, New York City, every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
You know, they're making an effort for young women who are identified as potential leaders at Salesforce.com to be included in those types of management meetings so that they can understand how those meetings take place and then replicate that modality of that decision making in their own careers to enable their own advancement. So, you know, he said, oh, I got an email. Mark Benioff said, I got an email from a woman saying, I don't feel comfortable going to this meeting because I'm going to this meeting and my manager who is a male is not. And he said, no, you absolutely need to be there because your manager who is a male has obviously had already the exposure to this type of meeting that you're not getting, so come. You know, and I think it's those kinds of simple steps that can vary from organization to organization and career to career that can help create new, fresh opportunities for women in the IT sector in a way that, you know, hasn't even been fully encompassed in terms of what the possibilities are.
Okay. Dana, are there any resources that you can point organizations to or sites that you can point organizations to where anything that an organization could turn to for increasing diversity and making conscious decisions around elevating the stature of women?
Well, I would say the first thing is anybody who's at NTC should come to our session tomorrow, and we will give some practical tips for that.
Regrettably, this is not going to air. We're not live, and so...
People should have come to our
NTC
session
at
NTC.
I hope that you did.
It was a wonderful opportunity.
We'll hope you were there.
Sorry.
You didn't come to NTC. I mean,
oh, well.
It's your life, but you know,
exactly.
Next year, there'll be a 15 NTC.
Exactly.
Anything else?
What I would recommend is starting to look within your organization to see if there is a woman who can take that leadership role and who can start to bring other women to the table. If there isn't somebody within the organization who's in a position to do that, look to other organizations. Maybe there are collaborating organizations. Maybe there are partners. You know, maybe there's somebody on the board who has been a successful woman in business. You know, to have her come in and help think about how to structure programs, and it doesn't need to be that formal, but how to start to create that type of inclusion at the organization.
Okay, and let's stay with you, Dana. And we've talked some about what women can do for themselves. Let's think about what women can be doing for other women that we haven't touched on yet. Where can we start there, Dana?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think Rose mentioned this a little bit, but, you know, we're at a point in the development of women in IT where there aren't that many women in senior leadership roles. Those who are and those who are sort of coming up through the ranks, we think have an opportunity and maybe even a responsibility to be good role models, to, you know, really bring to the fore what they're bringing to the table. And also to mentor women who are coming behind them. You know, I think one of the things that we all experienced or have all experienced to date is that none of us really had any mentorship. We didn't have any women who were doing the types of things that we thought we wanted to do, who we could go to ask for advice. And now that there are women who are in these types of roles, there's a real opportunity and a real need. We've seen it already. You know, we have 40 women signed up for the session tomorrow. Younger women who are coming up through the ranks in nonprofits doing IT work are really looking for that type of mentorship. They aren't necessarily asking for it, so it's incumbent.
Although Rose would advise, and obviously all Rose said,
absolutely,
the three of you would agree.
Oh, sure.
Women should be asking.
Absolutely.
But from the senior level, we should be offering.
Exactly. And if women aren't asking, then we should be offering. I think that's exactly right.
Is there something going on at universities that, and maybe even lower in education, that's discouraging women from thinking about careers in computer science, computer engineering, computer programming?
I can speak to that.
Okay, Rose.
Yeah, because I took computer science at Oberlin College. This was some time ago, but I found myself...
Oberlin? Okay.
This was a while ago, but unfortunately, it is much the same as it was when I was there. This is circa 1994 to 1998. There are so very few women in computer science.
I know.
Yeah, I was literally like one of the only women. I think I was the only woman in certain classes and one of two in the others.
But does this... is there something institutional in our education process? I mean, but even going back to high school, but where you have presumably now, I mean, there are programming courses and you know, are we encouraging women into those programming courses? And then how are the women treated by A, the teacher, and B, their fellow students who probably are mostly male once they're in the course? Is there like belittling and ridiculing and marginalizing, or are they really, you know, part of the class meaningfully?
Well, that all of the things that you described can certainly happen. I think there's constructive steps that institutions can take to facilitate and reach out to young women who want to be interested in this type of work. There's a wonderful organization right now called Girls Who Code, which is founded by another Oberlin alumna that's trying to address some of these gaps. I think that a lot of interesting entrepreneurial solutions to the problem are underway. The institutions that really care about and want to draw more women into the profession, which I think is absolutely necessary. You're totally right that, you know, if you have these opportunities early up as you're bringing women through their early stages of education, it really sets the stage for future development on a much greater level. Along the lines of what Tracy had said earlier, there's so many resources out there. I could name a few. That's one.
Yeah, Women Who Code is one.
Yeah, oh. and there's plenty of others. I think there's the Anita Borg Institute for Women in Computer Science.
It again a little slower.
Sure. Anita Borg Institute.
Borg?
B-O-R-G. B-O-R-G. For women who are interested in coding and computer science. There's plenty out there. There's more than I could list in the course of a program.
Okay.
If I can jump in for a second, I think there are a couple of things to keep in mind. One is that computer science courses in college or university are really only one path to a career in technology.
Absolutely.
You know, I think most of us who end up being technologists in the nonprofit sector come at it from an interest in nonprofits primarily, and, you know, whatever the mission is of the particular organization, and frequently come at it from being, a junior staffer in communications or in marketing or in program or something along those lines. So it's not necessarily women who went into it thinking, I'm going to have a career in technology, maybe women thinking, I'm going to have a career in marketing, and sort of develop opportunities and see that they have an innate talent. But on the coding side of things, in terms of actually developing programmers, the organization Rose mentioned is wonderful. And I think part of what that's trying to combat, and maybe this is sort of getting at a little bit of your question about the university campuses, in the developer world, certainly in the startup world, there's a culture of kind of programmers. I don't know if you've heard that term, but it's, you know,
programmers.
Yeah. So yeah.
I haven't heard that.
So, you know, programmers and, you know, they're all guys. And, you know, that is in the midst of changing, but breaking into that culture is tough, and organizations like Girls Who Code are really working on that. I think a lot of people are seeing that women are, you know, clearly as apt as men at programming and certainly on the strategic side of things. But we still have a ways to go.
All right.
Too, this goes back also in a way to the question of mentorship and the question of, like, who's ahead of me and what do I see them doing? Because, you know, when we were putting together this workshop, we all realized that all of us have had really strong male role models in our life. I mean, like, we're like, wow, oh, you know, we can name all these great men who were role models to us. And, you know, it kind of, there was this moment of like a collective, like, ah, You know, and, you know, we don't want that to happen for the next generation of women moving forward. And, you know, that's not to take away from the mentorship that we've all received from strong male role models, but it is to say that men and women, fundamentally, the way that we communicate, even if it's the same things said in the same way, they're received two different manners. They're perceived two different ways. And the same communication from a guy that's like, you know, looked at as mavericky and looked at as like a trailblazer and a creative thinker, looks at, you know, a woman saying the same stuff is often interpreted as, you know, someone who is unreliable and has fundamentally ill-founded principles. So
I was thinking even pushy or obnoxious.
Pushy or assertive and aggressive.
Or bossy even.
Bossy even.
Let's well, I have another B word. Let's just say, I mean, she's a real bitch.
Yeah. And right? I mean, I will tell you that I have progressed to a point in my own career where I'm managing people, and to this day, I am haunted by that word because I will look at my...
Which word?
The B word.
Oh.
You know, and I will literally chat over to a coworker, hey, I'm not coming across too much of a, you know, during the course of this conversation, because, you know, being conscious of that means understanding that, you know, being a guy, you know, being one of the bros is not going to work for us. And
they still call it the IT guy for a reason.
Exactly. And, you know, we're not going to get ahead in that way. So, you know, this is part of starting a conversation of how are we going to get ahead in a way that's different and understands the context in which we're working.
Tracy, I want to stay with you just to pursue the question of what women can do for others, the women who are in leadership roles, aside from offering mentorships and making conscious decisions. Is there more that female leaders who have that empowerment can convey it down?
You know, I can share from my own personal experience that I have had some very powerful women ahead of me in my career at various institutions that I've worked with. And the trap that I felt they fell into that I have tried very strongly to resist for myself is now that I'm here being completely possessive of my power and authority as that person in that role who's been advanced that far. Mm-hmm. I think any woman ahead of us in our careers who's proceeded to the point of things like vice president, director, founder, principal, it's really easy because of the context in which we work to say, this is mine and all mine. You know, I have made this moment in my career, and you know, any woman who's coming up behind me is a threat to that because she might be doing something different or she might be doing something better. And I think, you know, for women who have advanced to a certain point in their careers, it's not about saying, what have I accomplished? It's about saying, what are the women behind me doing that can inform their own achievement that I can highlight using that power, using that established role that I've achieved to advance their own careers. So in some ways, that's beyond mentorship. It's actually calling out the context of saying, yeah, you know, like I'm confident in my role as, you know, vice president or founder or principal or president. And look at this other woman. Look at her achievements. Look at how she is doing this work this way. And, you know, focus that attention on her next. Because I don't obviously need to prove myself because I've already been here. And I think that's a trap that we fall into a lot, is saying I have to continually prove myself even though I have that title on my door that says vice president or director or principal or founder or president.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If I can jump in for just a second, you know, I think in terms of asking what we can do for others, it's not only a matter of doing for others within your own organization. One of the big takeaways that we want people to have from our session and from ongoing conversations is the opportunity to network with each other. You know, so it doesn't necessarily, you may not have somebody at your organization who can be that mentor or who can serve as that type of role model. Work with your peers. Talk to your peers. There are ways to either structured or unstructured peer mentor each other. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of younger women who are sort of coming up through the ranks, and there's a great opportunity to create some community, create some networking opportunities, help each other figure out career paths, help each other ask for things, help each other get mentorship. So I think even without having that strong or, you know, senior level woman within your organization, there's still lots of opportunities for us to help each other.
All right. And yeah, we have to wrap up, Rose. But go ahead, please.
I would just also add that if you're currently a woman in technology in a leadership position, to be more visible, and if you're also coming up through the ranks, consider actually presenting on this topic. Last night I spoke with a woman at NTC Beer, a young woman, very smart, who said, you know, I think I might want to present at a session next year. I said, absolutely do it. If you want to find a partner to present with, you're going to learn so much in the process, and you can keep that dialogue going.
Thank you very much, ladies. Real pleasure. And important. It's an outstanding topic and a rare one, too. But increasingly, that's falling away and it's becoming more common. Dana Goldstein, founder and CEO of Philantech. Rose DeFremery, founder and CEO of Lowercase D Consulting. And Tracy Kronzak, consulting manager, recently promoted at Cloud for Good. Ladies, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Real pleasure. It's Tony Martinetti, nonprofit radio coverage of the Nonprofit Technology Conference, NTC 2014. Thanks so much for being with us.
My thanks to everybody at Nonprofit Technology Conference and N10. You know Generosity Series. They host multi-charity peer-to-peer 5K runs and walks. Multi-charity means that you can have an event with a small number of runners because together with a bunch of other charities, it turns into many hundreds of runners and walkers. So if you're using summer to plan for your fall fundraising, or if somehow you think that a 5K run walk fits into your fundraising, I hope you will talk to Dave Lynn. He's the COO at Generosity Series. They have events coming up in New Jersey, Miami, Atlanta, New York City, Philadelphia, and Toronto. You'll find Dave Lynn at 718-506-9777 or generosityseries.com, but you know, I prefer to pick up the phone and talk. Make sure you tell them that you're from Nonprofit Radio. I pulled a video off YouTube and put it on tonymartinetti.com this week. It's a taste of Nonprofit Radio, a 2-minute sampler with Seth Godin, Craig Newmark, the founder of Craigslist and Craig Connects, Charles Best, CEO of DonorsChoose.org, Mark Echo from Echo Enterprises, and several other people are in that sampler. Of course, the full interviews with each of them are on YouTube. And again, the sampler is at tonymartinetti.com. That is Tony's Take Two for Friday, 15th of August, 32nd show of this year. Amy Sample Ward, you know her. She's the CEO of Nonprofit Technology Network. And her most recent co-authored book is Social Change Anytime, Everywhere. Her blog is amysampleward.org. And she's at Amy R.S. Ward on Twitter. Hey, Amy Sample Ward.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing terrifically well. How are you?
Good. I don't know how it's August, but I'm fine other than the incredibly swift passing of time.
Yes, I know. 32nd show of the year already. Holy cow. And August.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, and mid-August already. I know. But are you enjoying your summer?
Yeah, it feels like a vacation because I haven't had to travel since the middle of June. So many people travel during summer and it is their vacation. But for me, it's been a wonderful vacation of staying at home and having plans locally.
Excellent. We enjoy our summers, each of us, the way we like. That's very good. I'm glad.
Well, Portland. Summer in Portland is the place to be, so it's hard to leave when it's the most perfect time of year here.
Excellent. Yeah, I got to visit you out there sometime. I got to come to Portland, Oregon. I've never been to Oregon.
What?
I know, but I want to go. I really do want to go Pacific Northwest. Absolutely, I want to. Washington
and
Oregon.
Well, I'll believe it when I see it.
Okay. All right. What do you think of this? What do you think of this panel, the three ladies from NTC?
It's great. You know, it's really interesting. Something that we were reflecting on as a staff after the conference, too, was, you know, it's not a brand new conversation talking about supporting different groups, different communities, either within the N10 community at large or in the tech sector, in the nonprofit sector. But what we were reflecting on, really, is the way those conversations have taken shape and changed over the years. And this last year really felt like this was the NTC where there were, you know, multiple formal sessions, opportunities like you presented where, you know, folks could come talk talk to you and have their stories and their ideas shared more broadly, but also a lot of kind of ad hoc meetings at lunch where they would say, everybody come to this table if you want to have this conversation, or let's meet, you know, at the reception tonight. And so many conversations about how do we do more to get more people like us, or more people like you, or more people that know how to do X, you know, how do we get more people into this community? And I think that's really exciting and really interesting that it's at a place where it doesn't have to feel like, oh, this is kind of a controversial topic, you know, we're going to have to go over here in secret and have this conversation, but that it's such an open, you know, we really want to create a space in this community that is inclusive and is welcoming. And part of that is creating a great community, but the other part is saying we have to go out there and make those invitations, you know? You can't just say, I want to have the best dinner party and make all the food if you haven't invited anyone to come over. So I'm excited that the community's kind of at that space where it's ready to go out there, think about how we're creating community inside this space, but also go out and make introductions and invitations and welcome new people in.
Cool. I'm glad. So this feels like a watershed year for you. And
yeah, it's cool. Exciting. And I think it really inspired a lot of staff to feel like they're not the only ones, you know, getting to see that there's opportunity to bring more people in. Because, you know, staff, when we know that there's so many community members out there, but we don't see them because we're just in the office.
Yeah.
I think the NTC really inspired them to and reminded them, you know, there are all of these people out there, and we can invite more people in. It's going to be great instead of thinking that it's kind of just us, you know, tucked away in the office.
That's outstanding. And I'm glad I was a part of it. You feel like it was a
watershed
year?
Yeah, thanks.
Cool. Maybe you'll have me back next year.
Cool. Well, we'll see.
Yes, all right. I'll see it when I'll believe it when I see it. I believe.
good.
Heard that recently. So over there at NTC, you get a lot of inquiries about bringing people literally into your organization, hiring who are technologists. Yeah. So you have some advice around. Let's start with the job description.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is especially the question we get asked the most. You know that we need someone to manage all of our tech or to help us with our website, but that's all that we know. You know, we just know that we need somebody right. who knows more than we do. So how do we write a job description, or where do we even promote the job? And so obviously it kind of depends on what kind of job it is. If it's a website versus maybe an IT director managing all kinds of systems, et cetera. But there's still some basic steps that everybody can take no matter what technical job they're trying to fill. And first is to remember that you don't necessarily need to know all of the jargon and the acronyms and the Web 2.0 everything. What you do need to know very clearly is what your organization needs and what your goals are, who your audience is. You know, if you kind of try to make up for not knowing by filling, you know, a job description with a bunch of technical terms, but you've never put in there, you know, what we really need are systems that can talk to each other. Someone who doesn't have that integration expertise is not going to apply. They're not going to know that's what you're looking for.
Yeah.
So knowing what your goals are, the kinds of tools that may be necessary to meet your mission, knowing that and being very clear about that is going to serve you more than, you know, trying to do an internet search for a bunch of jargon.
Okay. So
that's the first caveat, reminder. And then also, before you start putting that job description together, there's a great opportunity to talk to everyone inside the organization, pull in from what they know in their own job. You know, what do they need? What tools are they using that they think need to be updated? And this is not like there's, you know, so-and-so who just personally doesn't like this one tool we use. Not a preference kind of list, but here's something that's really stopping me in my work. You know, here's something that isn't serving me to do my job, and create a bit of an internal needs versus wants assessment. Because when you look at that and you can say, well, here are things that maybe a bunch of staff want, but they're not the priority items of this, you know, kind of three or four things on our really critical needs list, that'll help you decide how to prioritize things both on the job description and when you're looking at applicants. So if you see someone has, you know, really great experience, but the thing they're most experienced in isn't on that needs list, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, wow, that's great. It's a really cool project you did once, but it's not what we're looking for.
Yeah.
It'll help you feel like you're not just getting kind of dazzled by all of the shiny things on their resume, but you know what to look for, or at least what to prioritize as far as their experience or specific skills.
All right. So a lot of the information that you need, you already have. You just got to start a conversation inside.
Exactly.
Okay. Okay. What? Anything else for the for putting together the job description?
Well, another thing that I would suggest, and it's not going to be perfect, of course, you're still going to want to edit it and make sure it, you know, meets your needs as an organization, but I've seen very few jobs that have never been, you know, hired for before. There's very few times where someone has posted a job and I've thought, wow, I've never seen a job like that,
yeah,
you know, ever in my life. So knowing that you probably could go to, you know, idealist.org, look where there are millions of job postings for nonprofit organizations, and look for a job title or a job description similar to what you're looking for, and just see how other organizations have explained that or how they've kind of structured some of the, you know, needs and experience pieces. There's probably many examples out there just to get you started, especially with, you know, that fear of how I don't want to say this the wrong way, et cetera.
You know, it occurs to me this could all apply if you were hiring a consultant as well.
Yes.
I was only thinking of the employee, but certainly it all applies in that respect too, consulting.
Yeah, and I would even say it applies when you're bringing in a contracted, you know, someone on an RFP. We want to, you know, designer to do this project, or we want to bring in, you know, an organization, an agency to kind of help us with this campaign. Like, even those kind of larger than one individual consultant, but still outsourced projects, still using a process like this, because if you can tell them nothing but what you want to do to meet your goals, then you will have at least served yourself well, instead of trying to anticipate all the things that they might be thinking. You know, you're hiring either this staff person or this contractor or this consultant because they know more than you on those topics.
Yeah.
So let them know more than you on those topics and really be clear about why you want to do those projects, why you need them to do this work.
Anything else around the job description, or you think we should move to starting to interview people?
Yeah, let's start interviewing people.
Okay, well, let's go. All right, so we've got these resumes, and of course, we're now scanning them based on what our needs are, making sure that we're not getting attracted by shiny things on resumes that have no relevance to what we're trying to do and what we're trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
We're bringing people in, and they're a lot smarter than us about the things that we're trying to hire them for.
Yes.
What are we going to do?
So I've seen a few different tactics work well for organizations. So it really depends on your comfort level, I think. But remembering, of course, that most often organizations are kind of small enough that the person they're hiring, whether it's a web person or an IT person, et cetera, isn't reporting to another technical person. You know, they're still going to report to maybe the executive director. So not feeling that that person has to kind of opt out of the interview process because they don't know the language. Again, they do know what all this work is going towards, and so they still should be a part of this interview process, especially the the manager, whoever that will be. But I would also encourage people to participate in that interview that are probably not technical, but will rely on this person, you know, ensuring their systems are great. The development or fundraising manager is often a great person because they maybe are technical, maybe not, but in many organizations, they are the ones touching the database the most. Mm-hmm. And if you're hiring a technical person who that, you know, maintaining that database will be part of their job, again, they might not be the most technical person on staff, but they probably have a deep investment in this tool working well for them so that they can do their job. So bringing those people in that really care that the tools work well will help in the interview process because, again, even if they don't know the language, they will be able to test out what it's like to talk to this potential
yes.
person they would be working with.
Right.
And if they feel like, you know, they can talk to each other, even if in different languages, and still get their points across, it's much better to figure that out and kind of have a feel for what talking and working with each other would be like in the interview process than it would be, you know, on day one when they've hired and they're just getting to meet and realize they just can't talk to each other.
Yeah, right. Versus the, she's kind of condescending to me or, you know,
right.
doesn't really get me. And yes, because you are going to be talking day to day once the hire is made. So,
exactly.
Yeah. How does the person translate what they know, the brilliance that they have in their niche of technology to the rest of us who are going to be using this technology and hoping it's all going to come together and talk to each other.
Exactly. And okay. I like that you use the word translate because I was also going to make a suggestion, kind of the other side that I've seen folks take in the interviewing process is to find someone that's kind of a translator or a liaison. So reaching out either to a local technical group, you know, look on Meetup. There's probably a ton of groups in your city, whether it's a nonprofit tech-related group or just you know, maybe if it's a web person you're hiring for and you know that you use Drupal, contacting a local Drupal user group and just saying, hey, we're hiring someone. We would love it if we could spend 10 minutes on the phone, you know, with a volunteer from the group just to help us make sure we have the best questions for this interview. And that way you've kind of bounced the questions that you want to ask, you know, shared the intention of the question, and had someone who isn't, they have no, you know, stake in the game. They're not applying for the job. They are not part of your organization.
Yes.
But they can say, you know, that's probably not the best way to ask it. Or, you know, if I was doing this, I would say it this way. So that you feel confident going in that your questions meet your needs and will speak to this kind of technical component.
We got to go out for a break.
Uh-huh.
We got to go out for a break. And Amy, when we come back, we'll keep talking about maybe testing and
yes.
some onboarding. We'll get that in just a couple of minutes. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at MontyTaylor.com.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Hi, I'm Bill McGinley, President and CEO of the Association for Healthcare Philanthropy, and you're listening to Tony Martinetti, Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%.
All right, Amy, we're past the interview stage, and we want to, well, yeah, we've decided that we want to move forward with a couple of candidates and test their skills. How are we going to do this?
Well, there are a few different options. I've seen organizations who, when they've kind of brought on that translator to discuss, you know, what are the best interview questions that we could craft for mm-hmm. our specific job and organization, that they've also said, are there some tests that could go with some of these questions, or, you know, ways that you would suggest we do this? And again, it really depends on kind of the suite of skills you're looking for. But I've also seen organizations really successfully say, gosh, we have this board of directors, and yes. a couple of them, you know, work in larger organizations that have an HR department. Could we ask you to tap your HR department and see if they have a standard set of questions or a standard, you know, couple sets of tests that they've used in hiring, and we can modify those. And that way, you know, it's been used towards success before, and most, you know, most board members are happy to say, sure, see if the HR department will share some of that.
Are these written tests or online tests? Have you seen?
I've seen things where it's online. It would be usually directly following the interview. So we've had the interview, you know, we've all been at the table talking, and now, you know, we have a laptop set up with this page, and can you, you know, walk us through how you would fix this?
Okay. As part of,
you know.
Okay. As part of an interview.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's, so I would say, even if you don't have a kind of technical component test, you know, to assess that side of the skills, one of the most, I would say, important tests to include in that interview process is to have identified from your staff what staff consider to be, like, emergency all hands on deck with a technical issue. So for many organizations, that means, you know, it's our end-of-year fundraising campaign, and the donation page is not working.
Mm.
You know,
yeah,
the
yeah.
Donate Now button isn't working. We just sent out an email to 10,000 people, and Donate Now doesn't work. That's, like, critical, all hands on deck, this is an emergency. And so in the interview, actually sharing, you know, this would be an emergency to us, and staff would be communicating in kind of a crisis mode
right.
style.
Right.
Walk us through, if you came into the office that morning, you know, you walked in the door and a bunch of staff were right there and said, oh my gosh, the donation page is down, the Donate Now button isn't working, you have to get this fixed right away. What would you do? And if you have a candidate for your job, you know, start coming back with very technical language, even in the interview, you can anticipate that's how they're going to, you know, talk in that moment. And if staff immediately feel like, well, I'm not getting the information I need, I'm still frustrated, I'm still in crisis mode, I don't know what's happening, you know, it's probably a good measure of what it would be like. If instead they're saying, great, this is exactly what we're going to do, this is how long it's going to take, you know, this is when we're going to be able to know if it's fixed, and people feel like, okay, I know what's happening, mm-hmm. even if I can't fix it, someone is fixing it, and it's going to be okay, you know, it's an easier way to deal in that actual crisis, and maybe a better way to talk through kind of a test, quote-unquote, in an interview without having to set up a technical,
yeah.
You know, actual demonstration.
Okay. You said there were a couple of ways of going about this. Any others? Or is that it? It's okay if that's it.
I would say those are probably the most frequent that I see, okay. Either, you know, talking through a situation or including something technical, you know, actually showing them some systems and seeing if they... I would say looking at the systems I've at least seen it happen more often when organizations have a little bit more of a custom setup. You know, they've done a lot to modify their database, or they've got a website kind of CMS that's custom to them, and they want to see, you know, hey, you've probably not seen this before because it's kind of our setup. Why don't you poke around and let's see how it goes?
We just have about a minute and a half left for onboarding. You have some advice about bringing somebody in?
Yeah, I think that there's this, sometimes organizations have this feeling that they've hired this technical person because they're totally different than everyone else, and they're just going to go sit at their desk and be technical and somehow do everything all by themselves. But ultimately what that means is they've never been oriented to what everyone does and why they do it and why they need to be maintaining these systems the way they are. So I would say onboarding needs to really focus on including this new technical hire in all kinds of team meetings, campaign meetings, anywhere where they can really be exposed to the way folks are talking about the tools they use, and they're able to learn, oh, I bet people don't know that we could really set up, you know, the database to do that report for them. I can help here. So they feel like they're a contributing part of the team and not just someone kind of keeping everything running in the background.
We're going to leave it there, Amy. Thank you very, very much.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. AmySampleWard.org is her site, and on Twitter, at AmyRSWard. She'll be back next month. Don't worry. Next week, we have two more interviews from NTC, the Nonprofit Technology Conference. I have a ton of great guests from there, and I'm going to pick two more for next week. If you missed any part of today's show, find it on TonyMartinetti.com. Small and mid-sized shops, remember Generosity Series, 718-506-9777 or generosityseries.com. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Leibowitz is the line producer. The show's social media is by Julia Campbell of J. Campbell Social Marketing. And the remote producer of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio is John Federico of The New Rules. Our music is by Scott Stein of Brooklyn. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
Hi, I'm Austin Marola.
And I'm Sloan Wainwright.
We're the hosts of the new Thursday morning show, The Music
Power Hour.
At 11 a.m.
We're going to have fun.
And shine the light on all aspects of music.
And its limitless healing possibilities.
We're going to invite artists to share their songs and play live.
We'll be listening and talking about great music from yesterday to today.
So you're invited to share in our musical conversation.
Your ears will be delighted with the sound of music.
And our voices. Join Austin.
And Sloan.
Live Thursdays at 11 a.m. on TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Talking Alternative.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at MontyTaylor.com.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
TalkingAlternative.com.